pulled into BOA, where everybody hangs a head. Rule needs to save Ace while his team gets some rest. Hey, Tepper, can you tell me if we're gonna get some help ahead? He just smiled and shook his head, and no was all he said. Take a week off, Maddie. Take a week to think. Take a week off, Panthers. And
beat the Falcons in week 14.
IR is getting bad. We're looking for a back to ride. When we heard Cam Newton's back, really thought things would be alright. I said, hey, no, man, why's the D been slowing down? He said that I don't know, 'cause now Jackson's also down. Take a week off, Panthers. Take a week to think. Take a week off losing. And
beat the Falcons in week 14.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. Happy Friday. That is the hack song of the week. Send in your grades, 704-570-9610. We'll listen again at 11 a.m., at noon, and then at 1:40 when the man-child himself will join us. Braden Gall of ESPN Radio talks college football with us at 10:40. At 11:40, Stephen Ruiz, NFL analyst for The Ringer. And then at 1, Trey Boston, your guy, my guy. We're going to talk about the Carolina Panthers and the state of the Panthers here heading into the bye week. Real quick before we get to Thursday Night Football, Stan, your reaction to the hack song of the week.
The exact same reaction we're all having throughout Metrolina. That's it. Whatever people are feeling, that's exactly what I feel. Good morning, Nicholas. Good morning, itty bitty fitty flounder still in the studio. What's going on, Charles?
What I'll say is, when we went for another round of it, that's what surprised me.
What led him to believe we should continue? Like there should be another verse?
No, I was just, again, I'm not going to say whether I thought it was good or bad yet. We got three more listens of it, and Hacksaw's going to join us at 1:40, but I was really surprised when he went for that second that second rendition. That felt like forever to me. But I did like some of the lyrical content there. So from the Panthers' pause this weekend as they are off this week, they're going to get back in the building starting on Monday.
Monday they're back, yep.
As they try and salvage the final five games of the season to a team we knew going into last night. One of those teams was going to get it on the right track in terms of winning and losing, mm-hmm. unless they tied. And I had felt going into this with a Mark Spain Real Estate Nick pick, even though the line was 6 points, I felt confident that Dallas should roll. It didn't necessarily look pretty, but Dallas did get the 27-17 win over New Orleans last night in New Orleans, sans their head coach.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah. So I a lot of people out, COVID, injuries. I thought this was a game Dallas went in as a 6-point favorite. Mm-hmm. And I figured Dallas would cover. So I was like, all right. Now, I just didn't know how they would cover. I didn't expect that defense to play like that. I didn't expect DeMarcus Lawrence to return last night, itty bitty fitty. He's out there making some plays. And quite frankly, they need to give up on this Taysom Hill at quarterback, the Saints. That's a terrible decision.
He was awful last night.
Four interceptions. It's ridiculous.
Including the pick six, which really, I don't want to say bailed out Dallas, but I think it took a little bit of the pressure off Dallas in a game that it was 27-17. It probably should have been 34-17. They should have doubled up New Orleans. So that last pick six really did help the Cowboys take the pedal off as the game ended.
I also thought that, you know, Dak throwing an interception. Yeah, and Dak throwing the ball 40 times. Dak was 26-40, one to one pick, 238 yards. He did enough for the team to win. I thought CeeDee Lamb was fantastic. And by the way, Tony Pollard is a real dude. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his contractual status is, but he's going to get consideration for starting running back money on the open market whenever that comes.
Seven carries, 71 yards, including the big touchdown. That actually was the biggest surprise yesterday is New Orleans came into this game being one of the five best run defenses in the NFL.
Yep.
And even they struggled with the, and to me, that's where the proof is. Like Taysom Hill being a slappy, I've thought Taysom Hill was a slappy for a minute.
At quarterback, absolutely.
But with New Orleans, it's been, well, you got Sean Payton, you got the defense. Like, they've got that offensive line, even though it's dinged up, and they were missing Teron Armstead. And
Ramchick.
And they were missing Alvin Kamara yesterday. Mm-hmm. They weren't missing a lot of guys on defense. That defense falling apart, that's a bigger sign to me that the Saints are cooked than Taysom Hill or some of the struggles they had offensively last night.
So, was the defense that bad? Take the pick six off the board. Saints lose 20-17. If a defense, you can't give up 20 points in a game?
Well, no, but it was how they lost. It was the 24 carries for 146 yards and the complete inability to stop Tony Pollard.
At 6.1 per carry. Now, that's fair. Now, Tony ripped off of his 71 yards, and I hate when we do this, but we do, 58 of them came on one run. Like, somehow those 58 don't count. So I hate when we do that, but I did it just then. I was not impressed with Ezekiel Elliott. Clearly, he's still hobbled with the knee.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a thing.
I did think that part of the big takeaway that I saw from this was people saying, oh, God, this is a rough game to watch. You mean, it's Thursday Night Football, and then it's two teams missing a huge amount of people while also being week 13 of the NFL season. Like, of course, it was going to be bad football.
Well, and I thought with the playoff implications on the line, you know, Dallas is trying to stave off. Dallas had been reeling two-game losing streak. They have been trying to stave off. Here come the Washington football team. So Dallas wanted to continue to keep pace. And New Orleans is just like the Carolina Panthers, and by meaning trying to fight to stay in the hunt. And with this loss, Carolina jumps ahead of New Orleans in the wild card hunt. Still a half game out of the seventh spot.
I think we finally reached the point where – because of where the Panthers are, I think I'm taking as much joy of the bottom falling out of the Saints season as I am any Panther win right now.
I'm actually curious for Panthers fans. Did you want to see Dallas lose more than you wanted to see New Orleans win? Or do we hate New Orleans more than Dallas for those Panthers fans?
So it was less about which I hate more, and more about what a loss would mean. Like, Dallas losing, even though they would go to 7-5, and it would be a bad loss, and, you know, Cowboy Nation would panic. I don't think Cowboys would be done even had they lost that game last night.
I agree with that. To me, this was about the Saints.
This game was really about, and again, the Saints, people are going to give the Saints the benefit of the doubt because of who they were missing. No, Taysom Hill's been the guy that Sean Payton has swore up and down for couple years now. He's a starting quarterback in the NFL. We just don't use him that way. Last night was the absolute proof that that dude is every bit of slappy. And the success that he has had has been almost similar to what Teddy, when Teddy Bridgewater was in New Orleans, Teddy benefited from taking over a team that had momentum in it. And I think that allowed his numbers to be inflated a little bit.
No, I'm not going to do that. Teddy at quarterback. Way better than Taysom Hill.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Teddy was the absolute best version of himself because of the moment he stepped in. Look at Taysom Hill's now stepped in as the starting quarterback for New Orleans twice. One time he takes over for Drew Brees and is able to, and everybody talked about the, even though we know quarterback win-loss record is pointless, everybody pointed to, well, it doesn't matter how it looks because he won. Now in this game, taking over for a bona fide slappy with a team that has lost multiple games in a row, lo and behold, the truth will set you free. Taysom Hill is a slappy.
Now, I absolutely love Taysom Hill as a weapon.
Oh, yeah.
Look what he did on the ground last night. 11 carries, 101, averaged 9.2 per, several first downs in the run game. I thought him, Kamara, I thought Ty Montgomery, I thought they did a good job in the run game. They ran the ball 26 times, 153 yards. They gave Dallas' defense 5.9 yards per carry. Going back to Taysom Hill as a passer, very unimpressive. His quarterback rating was 28 out of 100. Not great. But I was surprised at no point did they even consider, based on what the broadcast talked about, going with Trevor Siemian. At some point, you needed to manufacture some offense, pushing the ball down the field.
To quote the great Forrest Gump, Slappy is Slappy does.
Anytime a dude is throwing four picks, it's time for you to come stand over here with me as a quarterback.
I guess. I think the big thing that we can talk about now, and you had kind of referenced it, that now the Panthers are ahead of New Orleans, both in the division and in the wild card spot, because the Panthers have the tiebreaker to this point.
Correct.
We had a conversation at the end of yesterday's show, which is it more likely the Panthers and Saints are both going to be playing for a wild card spot when they meet up in the penultimate matchup of the season?
That means next to last.
That means next to last. Thank you very much. Or are they going to be more likely playing for the right to draft a quarterback? Last night did nothing. As a note, that's false. Last night made me convinced that we were both right, that it's more likely both teams are going to be playing for a quarterback. Because New Orleans starting to teeter into bad. They finally fell below, by the way, into a negative differential for the season.
Yeah, that's disgusting. By the way, can we talk about Trevon Diggs? Right now, if you had to give, and Micah Parsons. Hold on, I got to get this earlier, but I'm going to ask.
You okay? Do you need a hot towel? Maybe a cigarette?
I might need a moment. My shorts are a little inflamed.
All right.
real talk, Trevon Diggs or Patrick Surtain, the second. Right now, which of those, and that's not fair. Pat's a rookie, but clearly Trevon Diggs is going to be first team all pro.
He should be. He's the guy. If you gave everybody the chance to take any cornerback in the game right now, I think most objective people would start. If he's not the first guy off the board, given how young he is and how dominant he's been, he's the second guy off the board if he's not the first guy off the board.
Who I think is going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year real quick, Micah Parsons. First player with 70 tackles and 10 sacks through his team's first 12 games since James Harrison in 2010. He's on a pace to do something that hasn't been done since Bruce Smith in 1993.
So I think I said Monday Night Football. I keep calling this Monday Night Football today. Thursday Night Football, the Cowboys roll over the Saints 27-17. After seeing the Saints lose last night, the Panthers have moved up a spot in the NFC.
That away, Matty Rule. Get it done.
Does the demise of both New Orleans and Atlanta make you feel better about where the Carolina Panthers are? Braden Gall, ESPN Radio at 1040. Stephen Ruiz, NFL analyst for The Ringer at 1140. At 1, we've got the great Trey Boston there. But amidst a unsurprising Thursday night football game, we have another shocking move in college football. That's next on Sports Radio FNC.
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting to you the finest scramble band in the ACC, it's the award-winning Virginia Fighting Cavalier Indoor Outdoor Precision Marching Pep Band and Charter Society Review, Unlimited!
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, Braden Gall of ESPN Radio and the Cover 2 Podcast joins us in 20 minutes, but Stan...
Yeah, man.
We've had some seismic coaching moves this week. Lincoln Riley to USC. Brian Kelly down yonder to the Bayou. Southern speaking Brian Kelly. He was born in Massachusetts. We'll get to that in about 20 minutes too. But probably the most shocking things that's happened this weekend has not been a hiring. It was a walking away. You got a You Good text from me yesterday.
Yeah.
Because in the middle of dinner, I saw that Bronco Mendenhall, after 6 years in Virginia, has decided to bounce out. Were you as surprised as I was, or had you heard things about this situation kind of behind the way?
No, this came completely out of left field. For those that may be new to the show, new to the city, new to the station, I played football at the University of Virginia from 99 to 2003. I ain't that old. And so, no, my phone started going crazy about 5:30, quarter to six, as word started to spread throughout the Virginia media, and then some of the national guys got it. And I mean, it was a blow to the face. I mean, I got sucker punched. I did not see that coming. But when you think about it and you start to get in the weeds, here's what this is about. And then we'll get into Broncos credentials. Virginia's defense was terrible this year. And quite frankly, as great as Brennan Armstrong was this year, I believe he was, runner-up ACC player of the year?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't maximize the opportunities, and more so the defense. Bronco was been asked, or had been asked, to make some changes to his staff, and Bronco was not willing to do that. So he was willing to step away before he fired his defensive coordinator, Nick Howell, that has been with him since day one in BYU and his stand in Virginia.
It really, the stark contrast of what you just said mm-hmm. and Brian Kelly piecing out after a 2 minute, I'll see you when I see you to Notre Dame kids in front of them cannot be more night and day.
And you see a difference.
But yes, I do, because it was quick, it was expedited. But the difference is Bronco was leaving over ethics, was leaving over what he considers to be a point of integrity. Brian Kelly was piecing out quickly over money.
So I look at that and say, but the impact is still the same for the kids. Like, the early signing period is coming up in less than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So Bronco doing this now, as opposed to, and I know it's a matter of a few days, doing it on Friday as opposed to Sunday morning of last week,
mm-hmm.
that's still some days that recruits are still doing their thing. We just had a guy, a wide receiver, just committed to UVA, a transfer from Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
The transfer portal. Why are you doing this? So I think the result for the kid is the same.
That's an interesting point. I would also say I think another reason why I put this more on, wow, I'm surprised anybody in college football has this kind of ethics, is I would also say that he did it. He could have waited 2 more weeks. He could have waited until the early signing period.
I crushed him.
And well, but I think the point is, like, that's where I'm at. Like, when he made the decision, he tried to make the right decision. He didn't try to let it linger, or you know what I mean? Like, the second he made the decision, like, he even said in his goodbye press conference, he was like, yeah, my wife's still getting used to this announcement as well.
So there are rumors, and I don't know how true this is, that maybe Bronco is going back west mm-hmm. and that he may be not a tier one option, but maybe a tier two option. Bronco Mendenhall is a good coach for Oklahoma. Bronco Mendenhall is a good coach. His winning percentage right now, Bronco Mendenhall was one of the winning, he had one of the best winning percentages in all of the ACC. In 17 seasons as a head coach, he's won nearly 63% of his games. The problem at UVA, although he did get us to win the Coastal in 2019, he's 36-38, and he was making jack. Bronco was pulling like $4 or $4.5 million as a salary, I believe, at UVA.
Mm-hmm.
All in, and may have gotten a little bit more than that. So, and it's quirky. And I got another thing. I want you to respond to what I'm going to say, and I got another thing. But Bronco never really fit UVA football, and some people will dismiss UVA football. A lot of people don't remember the early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, even early 2000s. People don't remember what UVA football then.
Mm-hmm.
UVA used to be perennially a top 25 program. That's why I went there, one of the reasons. And the stylistics of how Virginia plays. We're going to play solid defense. We're going to run the ball at your face. That's how you get Tiki Barber, and that's how you get Thomas Jones and Wally Lundy and these and other guys, right? And we're going to run the ball. Bronco didn't do that. It was an awkward fit. UVA is the first job. It's the first time Bronco Mendenhall has ever lived or worked east of the Mississippi.
I don't feel like this when you and I have talked about him, although you have made your comments about Bronco not running the ball enough.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt like Bronco was tolerated at Virginia because he had won, right? People, it was fresh enough off the mentality of the Mike London years and all the
end of Al Groh.
And the Al Groh years.
Which was a dumpster.
When they were winning 8 and 9 games, people said, well, he's not an us guy,
but he's
winning.
He didn't fit. Yes, but tolerate is the right word.
And I would compare that to Justin Fuente. Justin Fuente, now for different reasons, mm-hmm. Bronco Mendenhall is a super, super likable, honest, sincere dude.
Very cerebral. Good dude.
Justin
really good
Fuente's
dude.
A little bit rough around the edges and that's a little fair. Bit harder to take.
I like how you said that.
But neither of them, by the way, do I think is a bad guy. I want to point that out because it made it sound like I was saying that about Justin Fuente. But I think both were tolerated. And I think that's the human element that I react to most in all of this. Bronco Mendenhall is a good man, a good coach, and can win. And
clearly very loyal.
And clearly very loyal. And at the first sign of, and I don't even know that it's trouble. Like 5-5 and 6-6 ain't great, Jack. I'm not telling you it is. But this isn't 2-10, which is where they started. This isn't the peak and the absolute floor of Mike London or Al Groh. So on one hand, I understand what you're saying, which is he wasn't one of us. It wasn't as good as it was. Okay, I'm not heartbroken to lose him. On the other hand, man, I guess maybe it's being a transplant, and I've felt that you're an outsider thing every once in a while.
Yeah.
It breaks my heart for Bronco, who I do think is a good dude and a good football coach, even though I know he's going to land on his feet sometime.
Yeah, he was not forced out. Bronco could have kept his job. The Cavaliers are 6-6. Fifth straight year, the Cavaliers are bowl eligible. Bronco has come in and stabilized the program.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I can say this and being honest, Virginia's better than 6-6. With the resources that are there, the facilities that are there, and in motion, we're building a new football complex. Virginia's got to be better than 6-6. And the way it looked, there were games that it just looked like, what? As former players, we all on the group chat, like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
I challenge anybody, go look back in the 90s, early 2000s, and look at the number of active NFL players in the league from UVA at any given moment. It's not what people think of UVA football now. Another point that I thought was interesting, the irony in this, when Justin Fuente, who was announced as Virginia Tech's head coach, as Virginia Tech was sending a swan song for Frank Beamer, Commonwealth Cup, Virginia Tech beat Virginia, of course, and Fuente's announced, we were like, damn, they got to jump on the better coach.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get Bronco, and I was like, I don't love it, but I'll give him a chance. The irony that they just get, who they get, Bryce Pride, Bruce Pride?
Brent Pride.
Brent Pride, yeah. That's who Tech just got. And now here we are, Virginia and Virginia Tech are both looking for or getting new coaches at the same time.
And I think there's a commonality between those two things. I think the commonality has been Mac Brown owning Virginia.
No, all the way around.
I don't think it has been. No, I'm talking about the state recruiting.
Oh, recruiting.
Wise.
Okay, got you.
I don't think that has made Broncos' job any easier.
Yeah.
And Broncos did a good job of going into Ohio, which is another spot he's not really fluent in. That's a tough state to break into, and he got Brennan Armstrong out of Shelby in Ohio.
So they tried to do a UVA's recruiting process, right? And I used to get on their butt. I'm like, bro, do you understand? Country Day is over here rolling. I'm sorry, Charlotte Catholic. Catholic's over here rolling. Mallet Creek, rolling. Butler, rolling. Who's doing it now? It's going to always be Zebulon B. Vance to me. You can't say that anymore. They changed the name of the school. But Vance was rolling. They wouldn't come get kids. Like, there was a pipeline of kids from Charlotte going up there. Wally Rayner, Chris Canty, Alvin Pierman, Stan Norfleet. Like
The Dundada.
So, like, they weren't going to get kids that were really great players.
Mm-hmm.
They viewed themselves like Notre Dame. We're going to target certain players nationally, and we're going to lure them to Virginia for academics and the prestige, and you're going to learn how to win the right way. Man, damn all that. I want you to be physical at the point of attack, run the ball, and don't let what the Tar Heels do, Fitty. How much of y'all run the ball on us? Was it 200-something yards?
It was over 300 yards.
It's ridiculous.
So when we were talking about, with Bronco Mendenhall resigning yesterday in a surprising fashion, when we were talking about Virginia Tech coming open 3 weeks ago, I remember thinking, like, I don't think Dave Clawson makes sense at LSU or USC, you know. So there weren't a lot of guys that made sense on the huge jobs, but the intermediate jobs, which is what I think Virginia Tech is, the step below, and I'm not trying to disrespect Virginia Tech football there. And I thought, man, what a great year. Because of the Clawsons, right? Because of the Chadwells, because of the Healy's, because of the Billy Napiers.
Luke Fickell.
Because of Luke Fickell. Well, now Luke Fickell has turned down pretty much any opportunity he possibly could. Prestigious jobs. Dave Clawson has signed an extension at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Billy Napier went from Louisiana to Florida. And I think you saw that reflected in the Virginia Tech job. Brent Pry is an okay hire. It is. We'll find out. I think Virginia's in a really tough spot here to try and find the guy. I would love for them to take a run at a Chadwell. Will Healy is, again, still probably a little fresh on the vine, but I'd love for them to take that stab and find somebody, because there's just, but outside of that, there's just not anybody that really strikes me as, wow, what a great hire.
We've talked about it again in our alumni chat group. Who makes sense here? And the number one name is a guy that I revere. And it's ironic that Anthony Poindexter, he was Ed Reed, he was Sean Taylor, rest in peace, before those dudes. Anthony Poindexter was Mel Kiper's number one safety in the country. All-American on every list in the country. At UVA, tears his knee in 1998. And Dex went on to get drafted, went to Baltimore, played for the Browns, and all of that. He was a GA at UVA. He was a D coordinator and a safeties coach at Connecticut. went and followed Jeff Brohm to Purdue, where he was co-D coordinator and safeties coach. And look at the irony. What's the boy's name?
Brent Pry.
Brent Pry. Yeah, him. Brent Pry came from Penn State as the D coordinator. Guess who the co-defensive coordinator was? Anthony Poindexter, D coordinator and safeties coach. There is a movement from former players, alumni, those in the community there in Central Virginia to bring who we call Dex home to give him his first head coaching job at UVA. And by the way, Dex is going into the College Football Hall of Fame this month.
I do think if you're going – if I think what you've said, the reason why Poindexter makes a lot of sense to me is just, like, there was clearly always going to be something with Bronco that he wasn't a UVA guy, and he didn't buy into what UVA football had been.
Stop me if you've heard these names. I'm sorry, real quick. Everybody heard Tiki Barber, Thomas Jones, Charles Kirby, Terry Kirby? Like, go ahead.
I have heard of them.
I get emotional.
I wouldn't let you know. I have heard of them.
Gotcha. Go ahead.
But I do think that is... I hate that. I sometimes hate it, man, when we go to the, well, you're one of us, so we're going to hire you. But if that's clearly something that was missing under Bronco Mendenhall, now feels like the right time with the program stabilized to make that kind of a hire, even if I still kind of look at it and go, I guess.
Virginia football is not sexy. Be physical. Trench play. That's what we do.
I wouldn't put that on a bumper sticker. Virginia football is not sexy. 704-570-9610. The Virginia Cavaliers head football coach job is available here. Virginia, what does Virginia have to do to do better, to make a better hire than Virginia Tech? But as we keep it on college football, Braden Gall of ESPN Radio assesses college football championship week in Southern accents on Sports Radio FNZ.
It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
Sports Radio FNZ. Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. Tell me you're a sociopath without telling me you're a sociopath. Brian Kelly throwing a little Southern English on the fastball at an LSU pep rally. As a pep rally. That's what that was. That was a moment during a basketball game to be like, hey guys, these bleeps don't matter. Hey y'all, I'm Brian Kelly. I call Paul Feinbaum.
What are you doing right
that,
there?
That's...
What are you doing?
I'm going a little bit farther than Brian Kelly went last night.
Can I say this? And I know, yes, I'm in the minority, literally and figuratively. I thought it was charming.
Oh,
I thought it was charming.
You are such a chosh.
No, I want him. When in Rome, just go all in. Embrace it.
So if I suddenly started trying to talk like Kyle Bailey, that would be charming to you? Hey, y'all. Nick Wilson here. Yeah. Let's talk some Cleveland Browns football. I don't know why I made him sound like Slinky.
If we were meeting for the first time and you used that voice coming from Ohio, I'd be like, all right, the man lives in Ohio, but clearly he has some Southern roots.
That's, you know what?
I thought it was charming.
We've got a full weekend of college championship football to talk, but the number one thing I want to know, what our guest thinks about of ESPN Radio and the Cover 2 podcast, the great Braden Gall. Braden, I'm going to need you to give a grade on Brian Kelly's Southern grits.
Well, what's funny is, like, I've lived all over this country, but I've been in the South for like 35 of my 39 years. I'm an SEC graduate, but I've worked in radio, so I've worked really hard on my non-regional diction. But every now and then, y'all, we start talking about Georgia and Bama, and like, things sound a little different when you start talking about Georgia and Bama. So sometimes it just comes out, you know, like, you have a glass of whiskey and sometimes things start sounding a little differently. You get me a plate of grits in front of me, it, you know, some shrimp and grits, I might start talking a little differently. So you just never know, man. It's late at night on a Saturday night after a Georgia win. I bet you things sound a little different in Atlanta than they would on Saturday morning. So I think I think it sounded ridiculous, personally.
Awesome.
Just because I've listened to Brian Kelly talk. Like, literally, Brian Kelly used to book himself on our show when he was in Cincinnati.
He booked himself.
And he has never sounded like that ever. Like, never in my life. And it reminded me, and I think I tweeted this last night, it reminded me of Sandra Bullock's accent in The Blind Side. And, like, I love Sandy, man. I love me some Sandy.
Me too.
But that was like some West Texas nonsense. That was not West Tennessee or Mississippi. Like, so you don't have to do the accent. You know what I mean? Like, you can just be yourself. It's fine.
So, real quick, we make fun of the accent. I didn't think it was a thing. I thought he was kind of doing a bit. That's kind of how I took it. But the actual hire. How soon do you anticipate Brian Kelly will be vying for a national championship?
Well, like, it's funny that we can kind of joke about the accent thing, right? But that, like, the biggest hurdle Brian Kelly has to clear is sitting in living rooms in the state of Louisiana and in the Southeast and, like, convincing people to come play at LSU. Because what the SEC offers you, people don't take these jobs and, like, all of a sudden get the five stars. You get the opportunity to get the five stars at places like LSU that you cannot get at Notre Dame, because that's just the issue with geography and sort of their own standards of, like, everything at Notre Dame. Like, they just fish in a smaller pond. It's why he left for LSU in the first place. Everything else he's shown us he's very, very good at. He's an incredible talent developer. He's clearly a culture builder. He's actually shown that he himself can change his personality to some degree and evolve when he kind of became the softer, gentler Brian Kelly 4 or 5 years ago, and they've won 10 games ever since. He's been to the playoff multiple times. Like, he's checked every box except for, can you walk into living rooms in the Southeast and convince people to come play for you? And because that's what LSU offers you the opportunity to do. And so, you know, Billy Napier, for example, Florida, I haven't seen him accomplish the highest levels of developing NFL talent and doing all the things Brian Kelly has done at Notre Dame, but I know for a fact that dude can walk into living rooms in the Southeast and get players to come to Florida. So when you come to the SEC, you got to be a recruiting assassin as well as all the other things, and that is the one thing we don't know. So it actually, you know, while we joke about the accent, like, culturally, I think fit is a very, very overrated thing for people. Like, oh, he's a Michigan man, oh, he's an LSU guy. Like, I think that's really overrated. But you definitely better put some dudes on your staff that are going to do some, like, dirty Southern stuff to recruit. And so you're going to have to get players to come to LSU. And if you do, I think Brian Kelly's going to win big. But that's – I don't know about you guys, but that's what I saw last night, was him trying to sort of, you know, acclimate himself to a Southern culture. And it kind of came off as – like, again, you see it one way. You know, Twitter sees it another way. How do the LSU people care about it? Right. How do moms and dads care about it? That's what really matters.
Braden Gall of ESPN Radio on the Cover 2 podcast with Nick and Stan. I know we have you. We want to get into some of the conference championship games this weekend, because there are some incredible games this weekend. But I do have to ask you, we've been on Matt Rhule watch as his name has been bandied about every college football opening, seemingly the big ones at least. Should Matt Rhule watch be over about him going back to college right now?
You know, that's a great question. There's nothing I can report on from a perspective like that in terms of interest from jobs. Like, would Oklahoma hire Matt Rhule? If I was Oklahoma, I would consider it. I don't know if I'm Matt Rhule, I would consider it. I think it's going the other direction, to be honest with you guys. Like, and again, we don't know, you know, I don't know what makes Matt Rhule tick in his mind. Like, Joe Brady, for example, like, we knew he was an NFL guy even when he took the LSU coordinator job. Like, there's guys that, like, if you lay your head down on your pillow at night and you dream of the Lombardi Trophy, you can't do that at Oklahoma. You can't win that thing at Oklahoma. So you gotta stay in the NFL. I think the trend's going the other way. I think guys like Dan Mullen, I think you look at Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. I think those are the guys that there are going to be. There's what, 5 or 6 NFL openings every year, roughly on average. I think there's going to be at least 1 or 2 college hires that go to the NFL this year. And so I think it's like everybody's looking at the Kingsbury model and they're saying, well, these schematic geniuses in college that can't recruit a lick like Dan Mullen, that he's a perfect fit in the NFL. He's the modern NFL coach. Like, I don't have to worry about developing young men and convincing moms that they should their son should come play for me. I don't want to recruit or deal with ego or live in this fishbowl. I like Dan Mullen just wants to draw plays and coach ball, and that's not why he got fired from Florida. He is a brilliant offensive mind. So I think Lane Kiffin is a name to keep an eye on going the other direction. I'm not sure. Like, Jim Harbaugh is another one. I would keep an eye on Jim Harbaugh. His name has never really left the NFL executive boardroom. It's always been there. So I think there's more of a chance guys going the other direction than anybody coming from the NFL down. Matt Rhule specifically, I can't speak to that. I mean, Oklahoma's an elite job. Notre Dame obviously has been filled by Marcus Freeman. Love that hire. So, what's appealing? I mean, LSU, USC, and Florida are all great jobs. They've been filled. There's nothing that's even close to an NFL job other than Oklahoma. So, unless you love the Oklahoma job, which oh, by the way, is going to get a lot tougher in 3 years when they join the SEC, I don't see it happening.
You mentioned right there that you like the Marcus Freeman hire at Notre Dame, 35-year-old brother getting a shot there at Notre Dame. What about the hire appeases you?
Well, so there's a fascinating, you know, and I played in high school. I didn't play any higher than that. But there's a fascinating shift in how we treat human beings, which is a good thing across society, right? Like, we just, players don't take the Junction Boy stuff anymore. It's just not the way it works. Like, it's just, Josh Heupel's doing a pretty good job of this at Tennessee, where you have to sort of walk a fine line of, like, making it fun, being a player relatable guy that you know, that has a relationship with his players on a deeper level than just a guy who yells at you at practice, which is the way I grew up playing football. That's not the way it works anymore. You have to be able to, I don't want to say be friends with your players, but there has to be a different type of connection there when you're building the culture that you have to build, especially at a place like Notre Dame. But that's, you know, that's a very prestigious sort of that's a brotherhood at Notre Dame. It doesn't mean they're going to win national championships, but that's definitely something that's very important to them. And that culture is something that he clearly has. Like, he's been all over that every step of the way. And it's clearly why Brian Kelly hired him. It's why Luke Fickell hired him. He's clearly got all of those things. So again, the defense was awesome this year, even without their best player at safety. So the coaching doesn't seem like a problem. The relatability seems like a huge advantage for him. And I think that, again, you've got to be, again, not friends with your players, but you got to do it a different way these days. And then, oh, by the way, also sort of get them to, you know, when they start to push back a little bit, you got to be able to motivate and sort of flip the switch, which I don't know how coaches do it these days. Cause like the way of, you know, the old way of coaching is probably a couple of years from being gone altogether. When you talk about how to build a culture in a college football program, and Marcus Freeman strikes me as a guy that absolutely gets that.
Braden, we got about 45 seconds here. Huge weekend in college football. Pitt, Wake Forest here locally, App State, Louisiana, and then, you know, Alabama, Georgia, I guess. For you, which teams do you think should be on upset alert in the college championship game there? Give us about 30 seconds.
All of them. It's college football. That's why we love it. Except for Georgia, actually, ironically, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm not sure Alabama has a chance to win a football game.
Wow.
It's a crazy thing to say out loud.
Wow.
I like Louisiana. We just talked about culture and why Marcus Freeman's a good fit. Why, you know, those players are going to rally around Billy Napier in his last game, which normally doesn't happen for a coach, right? Like, that's not how that works. So I think I like Louisiana in that game. I love Pitt and Wake Forest. I think it could be the best championship game of the entire weekend.
Oh, no.
Even if it doesn't mean anything to the playoff. I think, give me 45-42 all day.
Oh, God.
I like Wake Forest. Maybe pulled upset there. Nobody's going to stop Kenny Pickett. Nobody's going to stop Sam Hartman. It's going to be a ton of fun. I like the Big 12 championship game as well. That's a really, really good game. But, I mean, if you told me Houston won or Iowa won, I would not be shocked at any of them. They're all 10 points or less in terms of point spread. So it should be one heck of a weekend.
Follow this man at Braden Gall on the Twitter machine. And again, check him out, ESPN Radio and the Cover 2 podcast, one of the best college football podcasts going. Braden, you're a gentleman. We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much.
And a scholar. Don't forget it, boys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Gall. Let's not go too far there, Braden. The gentleman, Braden Gall, there on the Technicom hotline.
Did you hear him? Kenny Pickett is going to hang 40 on Wake Forest.
I also heard him say it was going to be a good game. So, by Goma, to you, sir, we have plenty to get to in the 11 o'clock hour, including another rendition of the Hack Song of the Week on Sports Radio FNC.